Thank you for taking the time to listen to this life-changing message from the Ministry of Faith Bible Chapel. We hope this message will encourage you in all parts of your life. At the end of this message, you will hear more information on how to contact our church family, as well as directions for you to visit us for any of our worship services. Until then, join us for the service in progress.
First of all, let me tell you who I am, because I know some of you might not know who I am. My name's George, and I'm the senior pastor here at Faith Bible Chapel, and I've had the privilege of being the pastor here for over 30 years. And I thank God for every moment that I've had that opportunity. I've been in the church actually longer than that. But I tell you that now because what I'm going to do this morning is I'm going to make myself real vulnerable. And I'm going to tell you where I came from. And I want to let you know that I wasn't born in a pew. All right? And you're going to find that out in just a moment. But as I thought about Easter Sunday morning, and I thought about the whole message around Easter, and of course it's the resurrection of Jesus. But I tried to think about, I've always tried to put myself in the place of those who are in the stories of the Bible, just to kind of get a better feel what they were thinking and how they reacted to it. When I thought about those first days even, or weeks or months that were after the resurrection, and Jesus ascended into heaven. Well, we know the Bible tells us the Holy Spirit was poured out. But what message did they have to share with their family and friends and fellow workers, etc.? Well, we know they had the Old Testament. They didn't have the New Testament yet because it wasn't written. So they had the Old Testament scriptures, which we know do reveal Christ somewhat in a hidden way, and the New Testament brings it out. But they did have the Old Testament scriptures. But what they had that was more powerful than anything else is their own personal story. And the personal story is that after they not only witnessed the resurrection of Jesus, some of them physically, visibly saw him with their own eyes, but most of them as a group they heard it from other people. But they heard it in such a way that they were convinced of it, and they gave their hearts, believing he was the Messiah. And as a result, Jesus came into their life and became real to them, and they in turn went back. Now, what would that conversation be like? Well, first of all, they would say something like, you know, Christ is risen. The one that they crucified is alive today. And they probably get into more of their story. You know where I come from. I was a tax collector. And you know how I treated people. I don't do that anymore. I'm living my life differently. Or I was this or I was that. And not all of them had maybe what we would call bad backgrounds or worse than other people, but whatever the case might be, they would tell their story, and the people looking would say, well, I did know you that way, and you are different, and that's how the message would spread from there. So I want to tell you my story and how it happened that I am here today, and I'm so grateful to be here today. Well, first of all, I grew up back east in Pennsylvania. Kind of a town of about 20,000, so not a real tiny town, but a small town in the anthracite coal region area there, where the coal mines are all around that particular area. Although Pottsville itself was more like the county seat, and that's where you found not only people who worked in the coal mines, but you also found the lawyers and the engineers and the businessmen that owned the coal mines and had to do all the paperwork, et cetera, like that. So it was a nice town, and I have to say that I had a great childhood. I have nothing to complain about my childhood. I grew up in the Catholic Church. St. Patrick's Parish is where I grew up. Irish family, a large family. I'm the oldest of six children. My mother's maiden name is Flanagan. My father's mother's maiden name was O'Malley. So we're pretty much Irish, as you get it all mixed in there. So we would belong to St. Patrick's Parish. I went to St. Patrick's grade school, and they went on to Nativity High School, Catholic High School. I was an altar boy. But the church was done in Latin, so I learned enough Latin to be able to do what I had to do. You know, just to say a few phrases, and then you ring the bell, and you do all of that. I'll just give you a picture. I grew up. It was a good family of six children. From what I know about my family, we did really well. I didn't know it at the time, but as I look back, my family business, my father's business, was Box Factory. They had one in that hometown there, in Altoona, Pennsylvania, and New York, and Birmingham, Alabama, and Atlanta, Georgia. They were spread out. So they were doing well. I didn't realize it, but my mom was a great mom. She would take all kids, and every year she'd buy us new pajamas, and they'd all look alike, and new clothing. And the thing about this, there were four boys and two girls. So the girls had to dress like the boys, because we kind of outnumbered that. Now, I know they're throwing pictures up behind me. I don't know what the pictures are, but they just said they're going to throw pictures up as we go along, because I didn't know where I was headed with this whole story. So it was a good family. It was a good family atmosphere as far as I saw everything. But one thing that I begin to detect right away, and I'm sure that other families have this too. My story will involve myself and the rest of the family, but specifically my brother Robert, who's 1 year younger than I am. So we're very close together. Our birthday's in October. We were very, very mischievous. Okay? So we were bad. I guess I'm trying to put some nice words on it. But as we grew up, and I think it was typical as the boys were, as what we did. But that began to turn into things that were worse than that. Now, I want to give you, first of all, two verses. One is 1 Peter chapter 1, which says, now it says we live in hope of eternal life because Christ rose from the dead. The only reason I share this today is because I have hope both for myself and for you. But a theme verse or a life verse of mine is this, found in John 10:10. The thief comes but to kill, steal, and destroy. But I have come to give life and give it more abundantly. I don't think it's any coincidence that those words are in one verse, because that's the battle that goes on. There is a thief that tries to rob, to kill, to destroy everything that God designed for you and is desirous for you to have, every purpose that God has for you. The enemy wants to steal that from you. And he uses all kinds of circumstances, all kinds of challenges of life, incidents that happen in our life. But the hope is Jesus came to give life and give it more abundantly. So I begin to see this happen immediately as we were growing up at this childhood. As we got to the later years, and I'm talking about the early teens now, we begin to do some things that I even asked the question in the last 3 years, what was it that motivated us to do those things? For instance, that in that surrounding that we set out to do in Pennsylvania, that small town, there's nothing to do for young people. The result of it is you have a town that has bars and churches. So with no activity for the young people, you find yourself actually doing those things that you shouldn't do. At that time, it was more drinking than anything else. So how do you get a hold of that which you're going to drink, except you steal it, or you stand outside of a bar and pay somebody going in to go get you some and bring it out to you? But we start doing this at an early age. At 12 and 13 years old, or 13 and 14, I don't know exactly, one night we went out and we did what really shouldn't be normal for anyone to do. And that is we went to a friend's house and broke into his house. And my brother and I, before a dance, went and stole a fifth of liquor. And we drank it, the two of us. We were wasted. And at that age, we had no control of our bodies. But we went out and we were coming back trying to figure out how are we going to get back in the house. So we had planned right, and we got into the house, and everything seemed to be going well. My mom was on the phone in the kitchen. My dad was sitting in the living room in a chair, and I made it to hang up my coat. My brother went up the stairs, and then he rolled back down. Well, all of the sneaking, just my father, who was built very well, athletic, had a football scholarship, etc., he jumps up from the chair and he recognizes what's going on and he grabs me by the shirt and he drags me, literally, he grabs my brother and drags us up the stairs. In the meantime, my mom's screaming as she's going up, what's going on? What's going on? And her husband and my dad's telling me, well, they're drunk. That's what's going on. She gets on the phone and calls the priest. Now, this is midnight. And in the meantime, he has us in the bathtub in this bear hug, both of us. I don't know what he was trying to do, but we were there in the bathtub thinking we were going to throw up or something like that. And he's yelling, May, hang up the phone. I'll handle this. Well, she got through. So the next day, we had an appointment with the priest. And we went in, and here are two young boys sitting with the priest, and he's going to talk to us. So he talks to us to counsel us. But what he does, he pulls out a book, and he opens the book, and the book has these diagrams of a wimpy kid walking the beach and this muscle-bound guy kicking sand in his face. But you could do something about that if you'll just get involved in lifting weights and being healthy. You can stand up for yourself. So he talked to us about that, and he talked to my dad if we could get a distraction, if they could just lift weights or something like that. So my father immediately goes out and buys the best weight set there is. He goes down the basement, he sections out a basement, and we were forced to lift weights every day. Now, what did that do for us? It made us the strongest drunks in town. Literally, that's what happened. But I bring that out in the story because, you see, man has a way to approaching problems that doesn't work. That wasn't our problem. Our problem was inside of us. So no matter what we did in the external, it wasn't going to help us. So let me fast forward a little bit. Although we had everything going for us, we were moving from one house to the next house, and I remember moving into a big single house in a nice part of town and had a lot of ground around us and everything like that, and everything going well. My father died, 43 years old. He leaves my mom with 6 children. I'm the oldest. We have Down syndrome sister. My mom raises us all. She never remarried. She raised us on the Social Security that was left. She took great care of us. I don't know how she did it. God bless her. And then she passed away before she was 80 years old. But we did not treat her, and I am not proud of this at all. Matter of fact, I'm not proud of any of this background, and although some of it might seem funny, it wasn't what I would intend for anyone to have. But the way we treated my mom was not good at all. Any restraint that was on our life, when my father passed away, I was 15. So you have 15 down to 4 years old is what we were. So I'm 15 years old. I'm just entering into junior high school, into a junior in high school. But things changed. That restraint kind of was taken off our life. We were disobedient to my mom. We did things that were not right. I was thrown out of the Catholic school. I went to the only other high school in town, which was a public school. And the only reason I wasn't thrown out of there is because there was nowhere else to go. So they had to keep you there. But we continued with the drinking and things like that. Now, my brother is generally a passive individual until he would get drunk. And then he would become what you would call an angry drunk and very violent. And when we would go out to dances, all I did was get him out of fights. He would fight anyone at the drop of a hat. That's just the way he was. One particular night, he got in a fight at a dance. And when we came home about midnight in the kitchen, I was giving him a hard time. Now, we were very close, very, very close. We slept in the same bedroom. We had bunk beds. We did everything together. We were tight-knit. We went out together. We backed each other up all the time. But as I was giving a hard time in the kitchen, I was looking toward the refrigerator, and the next thing is a mayonnaise jar hit me on the side of the head and smashed against my head. I eventually got 7 stitches in my temple as a result of it, and I was sliding down the wall, bleeding, I remember, and he also threw a knife at me. And I was thinking of that moment. I'll never forget this, what happened at this particular moment. Inside, something just tore. That this friendship and this whatever it was, I could feel it even to this day. All these years have passed. But something tore. Our relationship changed from that day forward. The devil comes to kill, steal, and destroy. But Jesus came to give life. And I could see then, and I can look back and see the enemy trying to destroy everything that God had in mind for us for our future. And he was doing a good job of it. So as that happened, and I went on and I graduated when I was 17, left there and went on to a trade school, junior college in Lancaster, Pennsylvania. And my brother graduates and he goes on to art school in Manhattan, Lower Manhattan, the Village. Now I'm talking about 1966. And what it was like. Does anyone remember the beatnik era? Yes, okay, you just told me how old you are. Everyone. But the beatnik era actually preceded the flower children, which preceded the hippies, and it kind of digress from there, I guess. Not progress, but digress from there. And move on. So he was part of that whole beatnik thing and that art scene in New York. And I was in this trade school. And 2 years into the trade school, they asked me to leave. I had done something I shouldn't have done. I stole from them. And I stole from them just to get the approval. Now, what was happening? And I'm going to share something I haven't shared before. Without realizing, and only over the last couple of years, I realized there was some craving inside of me to feel accepted and be liked by everybody. And that wanting to be accepted, and I don't know where I got it. I don't know if I could pinpoint it to not having a father as I was coming in. I don't know. I'm not going to go that far because I don't know the answer. But I had this craving. I wanted to please everybody. And in trying to please everybody, I did some things that brought danger to my life physically and also put me in situations where I could have ended up in jail. And one of the things I did, I used to steal from my school where I was going to feed a fraternity that was on the other side of town. And I got caught doing it, was thrown out of school. I'm not proud of what I did there, but this thing inside of me, and that seemed to kind of manipulate my life for years to come. The devil comes to kill, steal, and destroy. So after 2 years of being thrown out, it's 1967. What's happening in 1967? The Vietnam War. So the Vietnam War, if you weren't in school, you were automatically drafted and you had to go to the service. There was no lotto. There was no choosing of numbers. You went. And that was the period. That was. My brother, in the meantime, he drops out of art school. He flips out. He's not going to go in the service, so he changes his name to Blue Jay Morningstar. Really? And he burns his draft card, and he moves to Haight-Ashbury, San Francisco. Haight-Ashbury, San Francisco is the hotbed of the whole acid revolution and LSD and all the drugs. And he's living in Haight-Ashbury with the hippies that are out there. And I'm watching a TV one day, and I see on there about the Marine Corps. So I thought, that sounds like a cool idea. I'll join the Marines. So I went down and joined the Marines. It wasn't such a cool idea. But I joined. I wanted adventure in my life. 1967, 1968, I go in the Marine Corps. And my brother is out in Haight-Ashbury, San Francisco. We hadn't been in contact for a while. I get out of boot camp, and I end up in Pendleton. I get my orders to go to Vietnam in 1969. In the meantime, I hear that my brother left Haight-Ashbury, and he moves to Mendocino, California, and he moved there to live in a tree. No, was it a weekend excursion? He lived for 18 months in a tree. And they had a whole commune of tree livers, people living in trees. And they did, and that's where he was. And I heard from family that this was his journey, but I was going to Vietnam, and I thought it'd be nice, we're both in California, we could meet one another before I leave. We arranged to meet at Laguna Beach at a Taco Bell right on that ocean drive there. It was going to be on a Friday night. I didn't know what to expect. But when I saw him come toward me, I recognized it was my brother, but barely recognized because this guy was weird. I mean, his hair was all stringy and raggedy and dirty, and clothes he picked up in the garbage bin, literally. And he could not put two words together to make a sentence. He was so spaced out on drugs and acid and every other type of drugs. He would talk like, wow, man, just over your head. The devil comes to kill, steal, and destroy. Well, I thought, yes, we're going to have a cool weekend, and he has some acid or LSD, and he gives it to me for the first time. It was weird. We ended up howling at the moon for 4 hours in Laguna Beach. I do know that. We slept in this hippie pad. There were about 20 to 25. I snuck under the bed, tried to go to sleep, woke up the next day. Weird. Didn't like it. Was out of control. The next weekend, I go to Vietnam. I go to Vietnam, and there for 13 months, I'm out of the country. During that 13-month period, Woodstock takes place, all the crazy things here. We're over there and can't wait to get back to what we say is the world. My occupation in the Marine Corps was a door gunner and a UH-1E helicopter. I wanted adventure. I volunteered for all of that. The life expectancy of a door gunner was 8 seconds into a firefight. Thank God I made it because I was far from God and didn't want anything to do with God. I came back to the United States and something happened that I'll never forget. When I came back into the United States, it was probably one of the worst experiences I've ever had in my life. I thought going to Vietnam was going to be bad, and I didn't know what to expect there, but I certainly didn't know what to expect when I came back to this country, because when we came back to this country, all of a sudden I found out they didn't like us. There were protesters at the airport. There were all kinds of signs about baby killers. I had friends that were spit on the street in California, and I was stationed in Southern California. I had to do the rest of my duty there. But I felt such rejection. And again, this has only been the last couple of years when I begin to say, man, I really felt rejected. Now, I'm an up guy. I'm a normally up guy, and everything is going well, but I felt such rejection because, you see, I wasn't accepted by my peers, and I couldn't understand what was it that we did. I just went over there. I didn't even know where Vietnam was. I just kind of flowed with the crowd and went over there, trying to just enjoy and have all the adventures I could. But this rejection was so bad, and I haven't told this publicly except the last service. This rejection was so bad that in order for me to go out, I felt as though I had to go down and buy a wig. And I went down and bought a wig that showed that I had long hair, because I had short hair being in the Marines and everybody else had long hair out there. So if I was going to be accepted, I had to have a wig. And I hid. Now, if anyone knows me, that is not me, really, even though some would say, well, it won't hurt if you had something up there. But I did. I bought this wig. It was long and it was cool. And I go out and people accepted me. And I thought, what was the difference? You know, rejection can do funny things to you. When you feel rejected or you feel like you're not liked or not accepted, you want to fit in. We all want to fit in, and we disguise ourselves sometimes. We try to be something that we're not in order to be accepted by people. And then we end up living our lives doing that over and over and over again. And between the wanting to please everyone and wanting to be friends with everyone and the rejection, I was living a life that was dangerous. I did crazy things to please people. I put myself in a position where I could have been in jail or I could have literally been hurt physically. But I did it just to whatever. I still don't have all the answers to it, but I know it was there. So this rejection was there, but I was going on with life. So the next thing I did to hide myself is I got deeper involved in drugs. I was living with four Marines that I went to Vietnam with, but I was still in the service. They were out. And I had 18 months to do in Southern California. They were dealing drugs and living off the GI Bill. And I'm not just talking about a little bit of drugs. They were growing marijuana in the backyard. They were growing sunflowers that would hide the marijuana from airplanes searching over. It was a big backyard. And they were heavily dealing drugs. And there I was living with them during this time. While I'm there, my younger brother, David, who's 6 years younger than me, gets out of high school. He moves out to California with Big Brother. Here's this 17-year-old, blonde, good-looking, 6'1" guy. He's been on drugs since he's 13 years old, back east, living with my mom. The devil comes to kill, steal, and destroy. But he thought he was in heaven, living with Big Brother and all these guys dealing drugs, California, Southern California. We were living together. One day I got a letter from my brother Robert. You remember Robert, the guy in the tree? I get a letter, it's from Colorado. And in the letter, he begins to tell me of his story and journey, how he was in Mendocino, and the National Guard came along and drove them out of the forest because it was a national park reserve, and drove them out. So they moved the whole commune to Taos, New Mexico. So it was Morning Star Commune in Taos, New Mexico, which is another hippie area and communal type area at that time. And then while he was in Taos, New Mexico, he had the only pickup truck. And he's telling me in this letter how one day those that were living in the commune came to him and said, listen, there's something going on up in Boulder we want to go to. It's a holy man's jam session. There's always something going on in Boulder. You know that. Well, in the 60s, it was really going on. So he gets the pickup truck. They all drive up to Boulder, Colorado. And he tells me a story how he was walking down the streets of Boulder, somewhere around the campus, and an old friend of his who almost died in his home from an overdose walked up to him and told him about Jesus Christ. And now he's given his life over to Jesus Christ. Now, you would think I'd be happy, right? I thought he was freaking out again. Now he's freaking out on Jesus, some religious trip. I had no idea what it meant to find Jesus. I didn't know he was lost. And yet he said he found Jesus. So I went back to doing what we were doing there in California, and about 4 months later, I get another letter. And in this letter, it's an invitation. He said, George, I'm getting married, and I'd like you to be best man. Would you come to Colorado in August 1971? Mom and the other kids are coming from Pennsylvania. You and Dave can come. We'll all come for the wedding in August. We thought it was a great idea. Now, I need to tell you about the car that I was driving. I owned a 1967 Volkswagen Bug. It was the coolest car I ever had. When I got back from Vietnam, one of the first things I did as a show of rebellion, because I was still in the Marine Corps, I went out and bought some spray paint, red and blue, because it was white. And I painted my car red, white, and blue, spray painted it. That was my sign of rebellion. I was kind of like, stick it to you. Here's my rebellion. I drive on the base with this red, white, and blue Volkswagen. So we had to find out a way to get back to Colorado. We didn't have any money. Except that my brother had received a $1,000 gift as a graduation present. And I said, you know, I devised a way. I can take that $1,000 and make it $4,000 if I'll just make a drug deal. And we have friends back in Pennsylvania. I can buy drugs here. They'll pay three times the price back there. So I devised this plan how to do it. We got the marijuana, we put it in kilos, we put it in wax paper, I put it in suitcase, put my Marine Corps uniform on, the devil comes to kill, steal, destroy, and flew it back to Pennsylvania. If I would have been caught, I would have been in prison today. I made the deal, made the $3,000 on top of it. I got on a plane, flew into Colorado because David was going to drive my Volkswagen Bug to Colorado. We're going to go to the wedding, drive back. I was going to get out in 6 months. We're going to move to Canada. We're both going to live in a tree. We thought that was a cool idea. But the other brother, I wanted to get out of the country. So I flew into Stapleton, the old airport, and as I go up to the curb where he pulls up in my Volkswagen, I open the door and I look, and to this day I see kind of a glow. This David is looking at me with a shine on his face, and he said, George, you won't believe what happened to me this week. I found Jesus Christ. I got mad. I said, what are you talking about, this Jesus Christ thing, you know, that they got you into? Because I kind of felt a little rejected. Here's a guy that I'm going to hang around with, and now he's gone off on this weird trip that Rob went off on, and I kind of felt that. But we're going to have a good time, right? Mom's there. Kids are there. I failed to mention that, and maybe I did mention, one of our sisters was Down syndrome. She was there, and she's just a lovely girl, and there was a lot of joy, and saw Mom, and we go to the wedding. Well, before the wedding, on Thursday night, they had a service, this little church downtown Denver. And they tried to talk me into going to church. I said, I don't want anything to do with church. I don't want anything to do with God. You go to church. I went to a bar on Capitol Hill. That's where I went that night. The next night was the wedding. So I go to the wedding, and we're all dressed up in our tux and things like that. And we go to the wedding, and the church had a cathedral ceiling that looked like this. Had a point at the top. It was knotty pine with beams on it. And there I was as best man. You know how they stand at the altar area. And somewhere in the middle of this service, something happened that transformed my life. I looked up to that ceiling, and there was a cloud that formed about 5 feet oblong shape. Now, you believe this or not, it happened. Whether it was real and it was there, it was real to me. I saw it. It was there. It formed at the point and started to descend down right there in the middle of the wedding and sat on my brother and his wife to be in the pastor. I started to cry uncontrollably. I started to shake. It was an experience I'll never forget. And as I looked at that, the pastor said he didn't know whether to have an altar call or keep going with the wedding. He told me that later on. But there I am shaking. My brother David is behind me as I'm standing there. I turn. I said, David, do you see that cloud? He said, I don't see any cloud. After the wedding was over, we went down into the basement of that old church, and they had the pipes hanging down, but they had fixed up real nice. It was a Sunday school area. They were having the wedding reception, punch and cake. I never went to a reception where they just served punch and cake. Punch and cake they were having, but I was going around asking people, did you see that cloud? And nobody saw this cloud. But there was a young lady who was in the wedding, she walks up to me. She was in this last service, by the way. She walks up to me and she said, George, I want to tell you what you saw. You saw the presence of God. Now, in my head, I'm thinking, crazy, but I'm smiling. You know, I really thought, this is weird, and all this is it. The next day, I get in my Volkswagen Bug. I'm headed back to California. As I'm driving back to California, I get to Estes Park, and I decide that I'm going to just camp out. I pull off on a field off of Route 7 there, and I get in the middle of this field, and I sleep in my Volkswagen that night. I had a little mattress. You pull the back seat down, had a little mattress, had curtains on the windows. It was the coolest bug you've ever seen. My legs between the bucket seats, and I slept there. I woke up the next morning. You know what August of Colorado looks like in the mountains? It was gorgeous. Sun was shining, it was bright. I got out of my Volkswagen, I walk out in the middle of this field, and this is on my mind. My brother, who I left, that couldn't put two words together to make a sentence, was all of a sudden changed. I mean, he was happy, he was marrying this nice girl. My brother David was changed. I saw this cloud, those people were happy at this wedding. I couldn't put it all together. And as I was walked off, I looked up to sky, and here's the first prayer I ever prayed in a sincere way. I said, God, if you're real, you give me what they have down there. I knew that what they had was real. I can't explain. I just knew what they had was real. I get back in my Volkswagen. Now understand, I've never touched the Bible. And I'm 24 years old. I've had all these experiences. I'm in my Volkswagen. And all of a sudden, there's a voice inside of me. Now, I know what it is now, but I didn't know what it was then. It was just like a whisper inside of me that would begin to speak to me. I had a mouth. I mean, in the Marines, all the things I went through. And not only that, I picked up a hitchhiker, by the way. I picked up a hitchhiker. He's going to California. And I had cocaine, drugs, in the car. And this voice, I'd open my mouth, and he said, don't talk like that anymore. That's how simple it was. And I knew it. And it wasn't like a harsh voice. It was just like very simple. And I thought, that makes sense. And then I picked up the drugs, and I asked this guy, I said, do you want to do drugs? He said, sure, man. And as I picked up that drug, I'll never forget, this voice said, I don't want you to do drugs ever again. And I gave the drugs to the hitchhiker. He was the happiest hitchhiker you've ever seen. He thought he died and went to drug heaven. I mean, it was, it really did. So we're driving back, and I want to tell you how real this voice was. As we're driving back, it's August, we're going through the desert, go to Southern California. We get to Las Vegas. As we get to Las Vegas, we're sweating, we're hot, and things like that. And as we get there, he says to me, this hitchhiker, hey, let's go pool hopping. And that's when you just pretend like you're a guest in the pool and you just go take a dip and you cool off. And you know what I said to him? I said, no, that's wrong. Now, of all the wrongs that I ever did wrong, that was the least of all of the wrongs that I've done. But yet I knew it was wrong. There was a light. I'm trying to tell you a real experience here. The devil comes to kill, steal, and destroy. Jesus came to give life. Now, I don't know anything about Christians. I get to Southern California, I pull up to our house, these Marines are still dealing drugs, they're happy to see me, and I tell them, because I thought they're going to be excited and really going to accept what I said, listen, I found Jesus. Oh yeah? It was kind of like, and they weren't excited. I thought I had found the best thing in the world. It was like, I wanted to share, it was so real to me, so I start telling them about Jesus. I never touched the Bible yet. So they said, well, how do you know this Jesus is real? I said, you should see my brother before. You should see my other brother. You know my life. And I saw this, and I just tried to share with them what was a reality to me. So there I was for 2 weeks because I thought all Christians were back in Colorado. I honestly believed that. I'm 24. I'm supposed to be mature by now, right? All Christians are back in Colorado. For sure they're not in California. I mean, so they're back in Colorado. I'll get out of the Marines, go back to Colorado where all those Christians are. So after 2 weeks of sharing, sitting in circles, passing a joint, passing the wine bottle, and telling them about Jesus, they came to me and said, George, you've got to shut up about this Jesus. It hurt me. I couldn't believe what I was hearing. I fought with these guys in Vietnam. They trusted me with all kinds of drugs. And the greatest thing that ever happened to me, they told me to shut up about it. It hurt me so much that I had to get out of there. And the only one I knew is I had a friend from my hometown in L.A. So I go down to the phone booth, and as I'm on the phone calling him, there's a knock on the phone booth. I open it up, and there's a gal and a guy there, and they hand me a flyer, 8.5 by 11 flyer. I look at it. It says, Jesus Rally, Long Beach Auditorium, Friday night. I thought, Jesus Rally? I hung up the phone. Friday, I start driving to Long Beach. I pull in the parking lot. It's filled with cars. I walk into this auditorium, and there are about 3,000 people in there with their hands raised up, singing these songs, a band up on the stage with a big sign behind them, Jesus. I wept for 3 hours. I just wept and wept and wept. It was touching. It was like water just being poured over a womb, and I was weeping. I couldn't believe these were all people like me. And this man walks out on the stage, and he has a Bible. His name was Chuck Smith. He walks out. He had a little Bible, and he said, listen, if you don't have a Bible, I'd like to give you this one here. I went up and got my first Bible from him. Found out that he pastored a church down in Costa Mesa, which was near where I was. Started going to his church. All these people that were finding Jesus from all kinds of backgrounds, I was so excited. I start reading that Bible, and my life began to change. He baptized me in October that year. Chuck Smith did, in the ocean. Now, I'll fast forward. All this was happening to him. I don't know what I'm going to do with my future, but I knew the devil came to kill, steal, and destroy, and yet I have came to give life. And I felt life. I felt hope for the first time. I felt like I had a purpose, and I wasn't just every day trying to get up and get high again just to kind of escape everything. So then eventually I got out of the Marine Corps. Well, I'll tell you something before that even happened. After I had gotten this relationship with Christ and start walking with him. I was still living with these Marines. I didn't know where to go. One day I'm driving up the alley and this junior high girl from a neighbor runs over. She said, George, stop. Don't go near the house. The police were just there and they busted everybody. They tore up the backyard. All four went to jail. I waited a while. I went in the house. I was 15 minutes late for that bust, drug bust. It all happened. I got on the phone. They got out of jail. They bailed themselves out. They were waiting for their court date. They went back to doing the same thing. The devil comes to kill, steal, and destroy. That's what they did, just did drugs again. That Bible that I had received, it was about 3 weeks or so after this drug bust. I was sitting in the living room in a chair, just a comfortable chair. We had a big house, 5-bedroom house, and I was reading the Bible, and there's a knock on the door. I put the Bible down, and I get up from the chair, and I'm walking to the door, and I open the door, and there's a guy and a girl, I forget, sitting, and they said, is Jeff there? And I thought it was just someone to buy drugs. So I said, sure, come on in. So they stepped in the foyer area, and down the hall from the foyer, a long hall, Jeff's in his bedroom down there. And I yell, hey, Jeff, there's someone here to see you. Jeff steps out of his bedroom. The moment he stepped out of the bedroom, this guy pulls out a gun. He pushes me away. The rest of them pull out guns. They run into the house, and it was a drug bust again. Narcotics were there. I go back to the chair, and I pick up the Bible. Now, whether I was reading it or not, I don't know. But I'm looking at the Bible. All of a sudden, Jeff is to my right on his belly with handcuffs behind him. They got Larry from upstairs. They drag him down, handcuff him. They're reaching up the fireplace. They knew exactly where the drugs were. Someone had turned us in. And there I am reading the Bible. I don't know how long that happened, but the next thing I heard was this. And it was this quiet. And that voice said to me, I blinded their eyes from seeing you. Now it's time for you to get out of here. I said, I'm ready. I'm ready. God supernaturally blinded their eyes. Now, if you know anything about a drug bust, they don't care if you're on your knees saying the rosary. They're going to haul you away. They didn't. I believe with all my heart God blinded their eyes because I didn't know where to go. The next day, I'm on the base walking through one of those big hangars where they keep the helicopters, and this guy walks up to me. He says, you're a Christian, aren't you? I said, yes, how'd you know? He said, God sent me to you. I moved in with him that night. He was a Christian believer, a navigator, what they do is memorize the Word of God. He taught me how to memorize the Word of God. I kept reading the Word of God, and my life was being transformed. Still had no idea what I was going to do. So I head back to Colorado, I get out, I go back to Colorado, I get here, and I get with the rest of the believers. I don't know what I'm really going to do. So I just started doing, I said, God, whatever you want with my life, take my life and just, and God, well, I started volunteering, and first job that I ever did was do tapes and send them to servicemen that were in the service because the Vietnam War was still on. But I'm going to fast forward this and I'm going to wrap it up here. And where I'm going to wrap it up is that what God had in mind for me, I had no idea. The devil comes to kill, steal, and destroy, right? Jesus said, I came to give life. That pastor who was marrying my brother and his wife was the pastor of Faith Bible Chapel and the founding pastor. I replaced him as senior pastor 30 years ago. I pastored the same church that I came to know Christ in. Only God knew what he had in mind for me. My brother who lived in the tree, he became a pastor and the first missionary that went out. Talk about a sense of humor. God sent him to the Hopi and Navajo Indians. Come on, get that. I mean, he knew how to live there. He just knew all about it. My brother David, who came out, became our youth pastor. And since then, my sister has moved out here, is in the church here. My Down syndrome sister moved out here. My younger brother moved out here. And it's just been he has transformed. My mom, who dreaded us being in anything but the Catholic Church, came on to accept this and liked what we were doing. And when she passed away, she knew the Lord, went to heaven. And I'll tell you one more thing that happened. And this is strictly a blessing that came from God. My sister, Blanche, who was Down syndrome, she really had a mind of a child, 5 years old or so, couldn't read or anything, but she'd pretend like she'd read a book. But she was quite a joy and a mate to my mom all those years. I don't know if they have that picture up there yet. But I never thought that she really have to come to a place where she had to pray to accept the Lord. I felt she was like a child, that she would go to heaven if she would pass away. But we were in the mountains one day, and I asked the Lord if I'd ever have a chance to pray with her. And the answer was kind of like, well, she knows the Lord. That's kind of what I felt about it. Anyway, we were in this cabin, and everyone had left, and my sister was there and my wife, Cheryl, and we're going to drive back down. And Blanche says to me, George, how do I get Jesus in my heart? I prayed with her to accept Jesus in her heart. It was just a blessing from God. And as we were driving back, I'll never forget, the scream came from the back seat. I've got Jesus in my heart. And I thought, Lord, thank you for that blessing. And God blessed me with that. God, Jesus came to give life and to give it more abundantly. All of that travel I share with you, not that I'm proud of it, but I wanted to share because I believe that that's what Easter is all about. Is that Jesus gives new life. So maybe your background isn't as crazy, as wild as that. It doesn't have to be. It might have been that everything has gone just right for you and you have a good job and good family and all, but it doesn't matter. Profit a man if he gained the whole world and still lose his soul. Would you stand with me, please?
We hope that this message has spoken something personal to you. If you would like more information about our church family or service times, please call us at 303-424-2121 or visit us at our website, www.fbci.org. Faith Bible Chapel currently meets in our Family Worship Center, located on the corner of 62nd Avenue and Ward Road.